this is Bare Naked Politics. This is the politics podcast for people who usually hate politics podcasts. It's a place where you don't have to pretend to be some sort of expert to keep up. You know, if you're sick of everyone pretending like they know about everything when they very clearly don't, and you just want to come somewhere where you can have somebody explain everything to you on simple terms, if that's what you want, this is for you. And even if you've never watched the news in your life, I promise you'll come away from this episode feeling ridiculously clued up and you're not going to feel lost. So if that sounds good, make sure you subscribe. I'm Julia Bell, and today I'm going to talk you through the drama in Georgia. There is a lot going on, and there's kind of multiple levels to this. The first one being that President Trump, of course, is still absolutely convinced that some dodgy shit has been going down in Georgia and that the vote there was rigged to give Joe Biden the win. And it was quite a shock that Joe Biden won there because he was the first Democrat to do so since 92, since Bill Clinton. But he did win it, and he won it fair and square, and there's just no evidence to prove otherwise. But here's the thing. Trump is so sure that his election loss in Georgia was this big conspiracy against him, even though the people that make the rules for voting in Georgia and the people who ran the vote count in Georgia were Republicans, Trump's own party. So he's kind of on this rampage of burning bridges with everyone, including Republicans. You know, just anyone who doesn't sing his gospel that the whole thing is a sham. And that list of people is growing by the minute. So he is, his enemies are stacking up, let me tell you that. So I am going to run through that in detail just so you know what's going on. But another, frankly, more relevant layer to this Georgia drama is what's going on in the Senate and the Senate seats. That's, to be honest, more interesting at this point, because we don't actually know what's going to happen with that rather than the presidential election, which has been determined. So with the Senate, both of Georgia's Senate seats were up for re-election, and we still don't know who's going to win them, Republicans or Democrats. And to be honest, everything that Joe Biden will want to do in his first few years of being president seriously ride on the outcome of this. So, you know, these two seats in Georgia are so important, and I want to make sure that you can keep up with that and you know what's going on. So I'll make it really easy to understand. Please make sure you are subscribed to the podcast before I get going, just so that you can see every time I upload a new episode. So click that follow button now, and with no more faff, let's get you squared away on the drama in Georgia. Okay, so Trump, let's just firstly talk about him some more. As you know, he lost the presidential election. It is not a debate. It is not a conversation, much in the sense that water is wet. It just is. But nevertheless, Trump takes issue with that. So he is just hell-bent on making sure people believe that in the key swing states where he lost to Joe Biden, so like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, some sort of jiggery-pokery was going on. Conveniently, he's not as concerned about voter fraud in the states where he won. It's just the ones where he thought he might win and then he lost. He does seem to think that vote counters there have been doing all sorts, like shoving fake Biden ballots into the mix or chucking Trump ballots into bins and off cliffs, registering dead people to vote for Biden, like literally whatever it takes to convince the world that he didn't lose. And one of those states where he is sure something dodgy took place is the southeastern peach state of Georgia. And it is just so bad there. Like, the rivalry and the anger is just particularly bad, and I want to run you through it. Now, Biden's win in Georgia was quite slim. It was 14,000 something. It was under 15,000 votes was how much margin he got. And Georgia state law says if it's that slim, we'll automatically do a recount, just to be super sure. So Trump didn't even have to demand a recount there. They did it anyway, by hand, to be 1,000,000% sure of the result. And they did discover 2,500 ballots that had been missed off the first time. And 2/3 of those supported Trump. So that was something that did not look good. But it wasn't enough. Biden still won again. So twice now he has been declared the winner in Georgia. And this time around, it was so thorough, so careful, by hand. There is no denying that Biden won Georgia. You might be like, what? How did they miss 2,500 ballots? That doesn't look good. And that kind of contributes to Trump's, you know, fears. And I mean, I read about it. The officials in Georgia said, look, it will have been somebody missing a procedure when they were using the vote counting machines. So it's a good thing that we went over every single one and we caught the ones that slipped through the net, but it's not a fraud thing. And 2,500 ballots is not enough to prove widespread fraud. So it's not a thing. Biden won again. There's no denying it. But for Trump, like I say, he'll be able to say, see, you did it on purpose. And that kind of thing will be happening up and down the country. But like I was saying at the start of the episode, the weird thing about this whole squabble is that the people that Trump is pointing the finger at and blaming for being part of this conspiracy are Republicans in Georgia. So the way it works is if you think of each state like its own mini country with its own president, who is the governor, that's like the president of each state, and they've got their team, like a cabinet. In Georgia, the vote count operation is headed up by the Secretary of State. So it is like its own little mini government. And the Secretary of State in Georgia is Brad Raffensperger, right? Remember his name, Brad Raffensperger, because he's like right in the firing line from Trump because of this. And because he's been running this vote count thing. So you've got this fucking bizarre situation where a Republican president is accusing Republican state officials of conspiring against him to serve the Democrats. I mean, the level of paranoia that Trump is exhibiting here, it must be exhausting. It must be genuinely tiring to think this many people are conspiring against you and want you to lose. Like, it's just kind of a bit nuts. And Raffensperger, who's the Georgian Secretary of State, whose job it's been to oversee this recount and who Trump is convinced is out to get him, is saying, look, what? Like, we followed the process. Biden won. It's not like we're happy about it. We're Republicans. We wanted Trump to win, but that's the truth. And we just did our jobs. We're not part of some conspiracy.
That is the great thing about our paper ballot system. It is auditable. It is recountable and can provide voters the confidence that the outcomes are correct. Once this recount is complete, everyone in Georgia will be able to have even more confidence in the results of our elections. Despite the massive amounts of misinformation that is being spread by dishonest actors, there are those who are exploiting the emotions of many Trump supporters with fantastic claims, half-truths, misinformation, and frankly, they are misleading the president as well, apparently.
So that was Raffensperger there trying to assure the Georgian public, in fact, the American public, that he was just doing his job and anyone claiming otherwise is spreading misinformation. And he even said, you know, the president's being misled, which I think was generous considering the president is very much leading this voter fraud brigade. And actually, Raffensperger wrote an op-ed. I love it when politicians write op-eds because it's an insight into how they're really feeling a lot more than when they're talking to camera and doing interviews, because they're kind of on the defense. Whereas when they're writing an op-ed, they can more express themselves and kind of write whatever they want. But he said, my family voted for Trump. We donated money to his campaign and he threw us under the bus anyway. So he's saying, why would I lie about this? What do I, as a Republican, have to gain from being a co-conspirator with the Democrats who are not my party? They're the opposition party. And let's just imagine being Raffensperger for a second here. He was genuinely disappointed with the result. He didn't want Biden to win. And then Trump says that he's the problem. And you just feel like such a mug. And in fact, Trump was much more brutal about Raffensperger than that. He was much harsher. Have a listen to this.
But I understand the Secretary of State, who is really, he's an enemy of the people. The Secretary of State, and whether he's Republican or not, this man, what he's done.
So that was Donald Trump calling Raffensperger an enemy of the people. An enemy of the people, like he did his job. And what a bind for Raffensperger to be in, because his options at this point are carry on down the path that you're on, stand your ground and say, look, all I did was my job, and then be called an enemy of the people by the President of the United States. Or the other route is commit a felony, commit voter fraud, declare Trump the winner, even though he isn't, and then at least you get to remain in his good books. Like, I literally despair. I cannot imagine how he feels. It's amazing to think about. Trump knows the influence that he has, that his words have. You know, if he shouts fire, people run. People listen to what he says. And he's shouted fraud about this election. So it is making, inevitably, his diehard supporters completely furious. They are ignoring the facts, they are ignoring the evidence, and they are listening to his gospel. And that has had a scary impact on the officials who have done this Georgia vote count. I caught a press conference that Gabriel Sterling gave. Sterling is a senior member of Raffensperger's team. So he's a Republican. He's a self-professed conservative. But he's been helping run the operation to count the votes. And he spoke directly to Trump supporters. In fact, it was more of a plea where he said, you know, listen, please back off. We are now scared for our lives.
My boss, Secretary Raffensperger, his address is out there. They have people doing caravans in front of their house. They've had people come onto their property. Trisha, his wife of 40 years, is getting sexualized threats through her cell phone. It has to stop. This is elections. This is the backbone of democracy. And all of you who have not said a damn word are complicit in this. Yes, fight for every legal vote. Go through your due process. We encourage you. Use your First Amendment. That's fine. Death threats, physical threats, intimidation. It's too much. I don't have all the best words to do this because I'm angry. And the straw that broke the camel's back today is, again, this 20-year-old contractor for a voting system company just trying to do his job. Just there. In fact, I talked to Dominion today and said he's one of the better ones they got. His family's getting harassed now. There's a noose out there with his name on it. It's not right.
Gabriel Sterling there, part of the team that's been running the operation to count the votes in Georgia. So sobering to hear somebody stand up and genuinely sound so angry. Like, you could hear in his voice that he is just fuming at how violent some of these Trump supporters have been in response to this result, and based on nothing as well. And you might be thinking, how do you know there's no election fraud? Well, there isn't so far, is what I'm saying. You know, Trump is well within his rights to keep looking for proof, and it seems that he's hell-bent on doing so. But even the United States Attorney General, who is commonly considered to be a conservative guy, even though he's not kind of meant to take a stance, his name's Bill Barr, he said, we just can't find any proof of election fraud. It's just not happened. And if you've got Republicans in, you know, for example, Georgia, turning around and saying, we fucking organised the vote count and we're telling you there isn't any fraud, why would we lie about this? Then I think Trump is truly clutching at straws. And not that there is any excuse for threats anyway, but these threats being based on nothing is truly heartbreaking. And do you know what? I've not even got to the worst part of this, because even if Trump managed to convince the governor of Georgia to override the election result and somehow illegally step in and demand that Trump won it, I mean, that's literally illegal. The governor of Georgia has said in a statement that he will never do that. But even if he did, Biden would still have won the election. Georgia on its own isn't enough. Because just in case you've kind of missed how the American election system works, and I explained it in the first episode, but you might have missed it, they count up what's known as electoral college votes, and each state is worth a different amount of electoral college votes. And the person who gets more than 270 in total wins the election. So between Trump and Biden, whoever gets 270. And as it stands, Georgia included, Biden got 306 and Trump got 232. Not a small gap that Biden won by. And Georgia is worth 16, right, as a state. So if Georgia's votes illegally came off of Biden's tally and swapped over to Trump's tally, he would still only have 248 next to Biden's 290. So still, Biden would have way over the 270 that he needs to win. So it's not even worth it. You would need to demand that other states do the same thing. You'd need to get the governor of Pennsylvania to act illegally and do the same thing, because that's worth 20. Actually, no. Even with Georgia and Pennsylvania, Trump still wouldn't have 270 electoral college votes. He'd have 268. So it's just not going to happen, my hun. Right, no more talk of that stuff, that presidential election stuff. It's a done deal. And to be honest, we have a more pressing and relevant issue to talk about, which is the Georgia Senate seat elections. This is huge. So basically, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but Americans have this mental system where they vote for all sorts of things on the same ballot that they vote for their president. And it ends up looking like this big, complicated shopping list of issues that they have to decide about all at the same time. It varies depending on where you are, but generally you'll have to pick who you want to be your president, obviously, but then you'll also have an option to pick your district representative. If one of your Senate seats or both are up for re-election, you'll have to pick one of those or both in Georgia's case, all the way down to like random stuff. Referendums, for example. So in Oregon, on the same ballot as picking the president, they were deciding if they wanted to decriminalize hard drugs. As in all hard drugs, you know, crack, heroin, cocaine, like that was an option that they had. By the way, the majority voted yes. So now in Oregon, if you get caught with, for example, a small amount of crack, what a thing to say on a podcast, you just get a small fine, like a parking ticket. So a slap on the wrist, a small fine, and I think you have to get a health check as well. But it's interesting, isn't it? Imagine doing all of that at once and having such big decisions all to make on the same day at the same moment. It's actually very stressful. And I feel like it demands that voters are so informed about everything. Anyway, that's a massive tangent. What I'm saying is the House of Representatives and the Senate saw elections on the same day as the presidential election, which got much less press here in the UK, just because obviously the presidential election is huge. But those results make a massive difference to how much Biden will be able to do in his first term, because the House of Representatives and the Senate, they're kind of like the House of Commons and the House of Lords here in the UK, which are completely instrumental in allowing or not allowing the Prime Minister to get his way and to pass laws. So the President needs them on side, just like the Prime Minister does here. From that election, all the results are through for the House of Representatives across the country. It's all in. So 222 of the seats went to the Democrats and 209 went to the Republicans. So Democrats have the majority in there, and that means they have control of that House, as Americans would say. If you hear them say, you know, the Democrats control the House, that's what they're talking about. And as for the Senate, we've got all the results bar two. And what do you know? It's both of Georgia's Senate seats that we don't know. I feel like people in Georgia must be just actually sick of being in the centre of all this political drama. But to make things even more tense, Georgia's two seats will determine who gets control of the Senate between the Republicans and the Democrats. So it's all tied up, and Georgia will basically break the tie. It's absolutely mental how tense this is. It's like somebody's written it to be ridiculous on purpose. Now, I had a question on Instagram. I forgot to mention at the beginning of this podcast, these episodes are completely driven by you. So if you've got questions, just message me on Instagram at juliabell_x and I can answer them. And Katrina or Katharina has messaged me to say, why are Georgia so slow? The election was ages ago. How can they not know who's won these two Senate seats? It's a good question. I understand why you're asking it, because it did seem quite painful, you know, for the presidential election vote counts in a lot of the states. But actually, it's not about slowness. It's about nobody getting enough votes the first time round. So they have to do it again into this kind of, it's like a sudden death round. In Georgia, basically, the rules are different depending on what state you're in. But in Georgia, you need to get over half the votes to be eligible to win the Senate seat. So if the votes get split up between lots of different candidates and nobody wins half the votes on their own, then they go into what they call a Senate runoff, or like this sudden death round, where they kick out all the people that didn't do well at all, and they just leave it to the last two candidates, the two that got the most votes. So then one of them has to get more than half when they do it in a runoff, when they do it in the sudden death round, and then they find out who got the Senate seat. And it just so happens that that's the case for both Senate seats. So both were up for re-election, and neither one managed to see a candidate win more than half of the vote. So they're having to do it again, which is, like I say, very tense. Currently, both the seats are held by Republicans. So Georgia, before this year, was, you know, it voted Trump in 2016 and it had two Republican senators. So it was a very red state, as they say. Their names are David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler. Both of them want their seat back. So they ran to try and get it back this time around. And both of them are running against Democrat opponents who are in with a chance, especially Kelly Loeffler's opponent, whose name is Raphael Warnock. It's a really good name to remember. Raphael Warnock, a Democrat challenger to Kelly Loeffler's Senate seat. And he actually won the first time around in that he didn't get a majority, but he got the most votes. He got 32.9% of the vote, while Loeffler got 25.9%. So it's all to play for in this sudden death round, in this runoff. You never know what could happen. Now, listen, I like to think I know my stuff about American politics, but if you've listened to this podcast before, I like to get my mate Elliot involved if I'm talking about America, because he is the super nerd. He works for an American news outlet. He's a journalist and he knows everything there is to know. So I had a FaceTime with him to get his take on it. Hello again.
All right, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. Living my best life. So right now, we know all the results for all the Senate seats except for Georgia, right?
Absolutely.
How do things stand at the moment?
Two Senate races. The Republicans will, they go into it as heavy favourites. They're two incumbents. It's been, it's a Republican state over the last couple of decades. So the Democrats are relying quite heavily on generating a massive turnout, kind of unprecedented turnout for a Senate election.
But it can be done because Georgia voted Democrat in the presidential election. Donald Trump will tell you that they didn't. But they did. The Democrats, Joe Biden won Georgia. So surely the same can be done for both Senate seats.
That's what they are hoping for. And it was similar. It was a massive voter registration drive among minority and disenfranchised communities that got those key votes that put Biden over the top in Georgia. It was places like Clayton County, largely black community, formerly represented by the late, great John Lewis, famous civil rights activist. And, they are hoping that they can sort of keep that momentum chugging along, because the last thing Dems need is any kind of dwindling momentum between the election and now. But as it can be done, because, you've also got two, ostensibly quite flawed Republican candidates and a massive conflicting message coming from the White House at the moment.
I was going to say, because Donald Trump, Donald Trump is basically saying the votes are rigged and it's all fraud. So surely the people who believe him, i.e. the Republicans, or a lot of them, aren't going to bother voting because they think, what's the point?
Yeah. So on one hand, he's now saying that he's going to go to Georgia to try and drum up support and make sure they can get these two Senate races over the line. On the other hand, he's constantly attacking the voting infrastructure in Georgia, which is run by Republicans, and essentially accusing the Georgia Republicans of being part of this vast conspiracy against
his own party,
undermining him. So basically his own party, yeah. So he's undermining them at the same time as trying to encourage people to vote for them. So this is a thing that the local Georgia campaigners are going to be quite worried about, because so much of what is now the Republican base is the Trump base. It's not.
Yeah.
So if he says my own party are ganging up on me, then, they are really worried that people won't turn out for them.
Because if he puts off enough Republicans and the Democrats win both of these seats, then it'll tie the House up. It'll tie the Senate up 50-50. And in that event, Kamala Harris, the vice president, will be the deciding vote on everything. Because that's how it works, right? If there's a tie in the Senate, Kamala Harris becomes that tiebreaker. So that means the Democrats would gain control of the Senate. So the stakes are so high.
Massive, yeah. Biden's entire kind of legislative agenda and what he hopes to get through in those first 2 years will kind of boil down to this, which is why there's so much money being spent on both sides in Georgia. So we're a month out from this Senate runoff. There's already been $283 million spent on this race.
Wait, can you contribute and throw money into this if you are a non-Georgian?
Yeah.
So people from other states are just going to be throwing money at this, depending on where they want, this race to go.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
That doesn't feel fair that people like someone like a really rich celeb, for example, from California, could be throwing money at the Democrats in Georgia, in a state that they don't even live in, just because they really want the Democrats to control the Senate, because then that would help Joe Biden. That feels a bit off.
Yeah, but then Republicans are able to do it too at this stage.
No, sure, both sides. So Joe Biden, he's the president-elect. He knows he's going to get sworn in on the 20th of Jan. He's going to be on the edge of his seat watching this whole process, thinking, oh my God, if the Democrats get both of these seats, my whole presidency is going to change, at least for the first 2 years. How big of a game changer would it be for the Democrats to have control of the Senate and Joe Biden be president? What would that mean for him?
Massive. It breaks down the resistance to him implementing all of his legislative agenda. Still means it's tight, but you're kind of the division in the Senate in recent years, you're working off the assumption that every Republican senator is going to vote against whatever you introduce as a Democrat president, even if it's just like, we want to supply homeless veterans with food. Because you're a Democrat, they will vote it down.
Okay.
Just the level of, you know, like tribalism has mm-hmm. has gotten to that sort of stage.
Because even here in the UK, it is tribal. You know, Boris Johnson, if he wants to pass a law, he can bank on most of his Conservative MPs to vote in his favour and to vote how he wants them to vote. But on areas like Brexit, which kind of confuse party matters, because you've got quite a few Labour MPs that are very pro-Brexit, they might support Boris Johnson on various things because they support Brexit. Whereas it seems like in America, it doesn't fucking matter what the issue is. Like, we hate you because you're on the other side of the house, and that's it, and we're not going to help each other at all, which for the voters surely just is annoying because nothing gets done.
Well, yeah, it's part of the reason right now that they're sitting there with no fresh stimulus package. The Congress has been yammering back and forth about giving people essentially, you know, stability checks just to enable them to carry on being able to eat during the pandemic when they can't work. And these sort of expired a while ago, and Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill have been arguing about this for months. Literally 3-4 months of just stalemate.
American democracy, man.
It's an omni-shambles.
An omni-shambles. A shit show at the fuck factory. Well, thank you again.
No worries.
You're Mr. America explainer now. I hope you know that.
Should I next time just do this in a Captain America costume?
No, a cowboy hat.
This is just you living out a fantasy now, is it not?
Right, I'm going to go now. I'm all embarrassed. Goodbye.
Arrivederci.
So that was Elliot there, my resident America expert, and he's a journalist, and for a job he writes about this stuff, so he kind of always knows best. But anyway, Susie on Instagram is asking me a question. She says, do they have polls which show who could win in the Senate runoffs? Yeah, of course they do. And I can check it if you like. Why don't we read it? I like to use 270towin.com just in case you want to keep up with this, or if it's like a few weeks later, because I'm recording this on Wednesday the 2nd of December. Things might have changed by then. But let's have a look. It says here, David Perdue, the Republican candidate, so he already has the seat, one of the seats in Georgia. He is ahead of John Ossoff, the Democrat candidate, but only by a little bit. So absolutely no saying for sure with that. And for the other seat, the other Senate seat in Georgia, that's between Republican Kelly Loeffler, who currently has the seat, and her Democrat challenger is called Raphael Warnock. Even Stevens. Wow, like literally completely even at the time that I'm looking at this. But remember, the Democrats need to get both seats to control the Senate. So they're down by one. So if they can make up both of these seats in Georgia, they will have control of the Senate. But if they just lose one of them to the Republicans, then the Republicans will have the majority in the Senate. I mean, granted, it will be by a fucking slither, the size of a Listerine breath strip. But the Republicans will have a majority nonetheless. Okay, I hope that was helpful. I feel like we covered a lot there. The actual date for the vote, by the way, is January 5th for the Georgia State Senate runoffs. So obviously lots of people are voting by mail or by absentee ballot. So a lot of it will already have been kind of spoken for. But that's the date, January 5th. Put it in your diary. And shortly after then, we'll know what's happened and we'll know who has control of the Senate. And obviously the other big date for January is Inauguration Day. Biden and Harris will be sworn in on the 20th of January. And obviously there's still speculation whether Trump is even going to go, which would be really unorthodox. Like, he really ought to go. Oh, recommendation of the week. Before I let you go, I cannot recommend this enough. Go on Netflix and watch The Queen's Gambit if you've not seen it. If you have, I bet you've binged it all, because that's what we did. But it is so good. It's set in the 60s. It's about a young female chess prodigy. So it's got all the costumes and all the flavour of the 1960s. And it somehow makes chess sexy. How they did that, I don't know, because I wouldn't have thought it possible before, but it is that good, and I want to be the one to have introduced it to you. So if you like it and you watched it on my recommendation, DM me and talk to me about it, because it's brill. So there you go. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to support this podcast and you want to support me, the best thing you can do is become a patron. I'll put the link to the Patreon page in the episode description. You pay literally the price of a coffee, and you get to obviously keep this podcast going, but you also get to access exclusive content like opinion pieces. I've done something about Brexit recently, which was particularly sassy. I do vlogs and updates and all sorts, and it's a really nice community on there. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and follow me on social media at @JuliaBell_X. It really is the best way that you can get in touch with me and ask me questions for future episodes. And beyond that, I have no more to tell you. So have a great week, and I will see you in the next one. Goodbye.